So we have a chat with Avi, and there's a few things that are going to be interesting in this, and one of the most important things is when we talk about LinkedIn. If you're any kind of company out there, if you do not have a brand, whether it's personal brand, I personally think they're better because people identify with people, not brands or logos. Even Nike, for example, they're just paying other people to wear their items, so then people see the item as more favorable. But once again, they're selling people. So Avi, over a period of 6 months, built a LinkedIn profile, the fastest way I've ever seen, and then with the highest engagement in that short time frame that I know of. And he's a bit humble about it. You don't want to admit it, but he does something really well. So I'm encouraging him to help and support people in that space. So if you want to reach out and ask him, by all means. And make sure you pay him because he's going to try and avoid getting paid to it. But anyway, so people that appreciate this episode, they have trepidation around LinkedIn. What can they learn? How do they be better at it? We also talk about in Fiji, where he's born, and what it was like being a military coup, moving to New Zealand with not much money, with a family, while also having a daughter, one-year-old daughter in another country, and the dynamic. And then also the challenges of being a corporation. And he was also a leader to a team of 20, so leadership ideas. And he helps with recovering of debt, so how to communicate in a way to make sure that clients are paying. So all around pretty valuable. I'm hoping he lets me post it, being the humble man that he is. But yeah, definitely worth a listen. And if you want to learn how to achieve financial freedom in New Zealand, got a free book, click it. Only reason I want it to be free is because then you're going to be in the newsletter and I have an opportunity to help make your life better. Some people might be clients, some might not, don't really care. To be honest, let's kick into it. All right, cool. Well, we're in a podcast now.
Okay.
Yeah. Now you're going to get all serious now.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Okay,
shit. Perfect. I think that's a great start. I like that start. So,
surely I'm not the worst one, right?
No, no.
Okay, thank God.
Now there's some bad ones.
Yeah, okay.
I told them. It's okay.
Okay, okay. Yeah. And you can tell me as well, right?
Yeah, I will, of course.
Shut up.
So, for everyone that's seen Avi on LinkedIn, this is your first ever podcast. And I think we're off to a flyer so far. So, what, you know, you speak a few languages.
Yes.
I've never heard of one of the languages you speak. Well, I've heard of it, but I didn't know how it's different. How do you greet someone in your native tongue?
In my native tongue. So I am originally from Fiji.
Yeah.
So we say Bula Vinaka.
Bula Vinaka.
Yes. So it means good health to you.
And Balangi?
It's a different language.
It's a different language.
Hello.
I can see with this podcast, there was a guy, Grant, part of a very successful company that we had on, and he was like the HR manager, and he's doing real well in life.
Yes.
And for 20 minutes, we didn't say anything. We just laughed.
Okay.
So the bar's low. You know, we can move from there.
Yeah.
So just to help people, apart from the hysterical laughing, what is it that you do?
I work for Instant Finance. I should not say that.
Shit,
man.
Okay. So, what do you do, Avi? I think this is gold content.
I work as a recovery agent.
I think this is going to be a Grant podcast. I love it. Yeah. Okay. What does a recovery agent do, Avi, from Instant Finance?
I go out and meet debtors. I don't want to pass.
Next question.
Essentially, they keep me in the job.
Yeah. So essentially, people that aren't paying, you reach out to them in an empathetic way, and you're like, hey, let's work through this together so you can get through these payments. Is that right?
That's the general idea. So I think I relate... speaking to debtors like my children.
Your children are debtors,
You gotta hold their hands and you know, lead them from one point to the other.
So, I'll try to pull it together. I swear to God, this is what happened with Grant. You know when you're in school and you're sitting there and you're with your mate, and something happens and you've got to be serious, you don't get to laugh.
And it's that mate who's just fucked it up.
you just messing with you. Yeah. So one of us is going to rise above and pull this together.
Okay.
Shotgun, not me though. You know. Okay. So kids are debtors in a way. Interesting. What? So why do people do companies come to you guys for that to be resolved, or who?
No, so our company is in the business of giving out loans.
Oh, gotcha.
So these are the loans that we look after in-house. And me being the sole agent for the company gets the responsibility to service the whole of Auckland.
Wow. Wow. So you're just the go-to man for debt recovery.
For now, I am.
For now.
And that has been for the last 10 years.
Wow. It's good stuff. All right. Well, how about we go back, you know, a few hundred years to when you're first born?
Yes.
We said where you're Fiji. You're born in Fiji.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I was born in Fiji.
Yeah, yeah. Boom. See, I'm paying attention. What's Fiji like when you've, like, what? When were you born? What
so, year? This was early 70s.
Whew.
Yeah, another time, another era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like? What's Fiji like in the 70s? Has it changed much?
Fiji, so I was raised in Suva, which is the capital of Fiji.
Oh, yeah.
And as a growing up person in the 80s, things were a lot different. So, you know, it's, how do you explain this, Ryan?
Strategically. Things, or not, I don't think you should strategically. I should think you should just do it, but that's up to you.
Things have always been quite laid back in the islands. The Fijian economy was doing so well up to the period of 1987 when we experienced our first military coup. And at that stage, the Fijian currency was possibly one or two cents short in comparison with the US dollar.
And all of a sudden,
yeah, it went downhill.
What led to the military coup? Like, normally there's like an internal conflict and that leads to an uprising, and it usually happens in a cycle from wealth disparity.
Yes.
And then suddenly there's fights.
So there was this perception that the Indians, the Indo-Fijians, were trying to get power. And this didn't go well with the natives, I suppose. And there was a lot of rumblings when the new elected government came into power in 1987, and there were a lot of Indians in that parliamentary group.
Wow. So then they took over with the military.
Yes.
So that must have been quite a hard time, because, you know, you were in the demographic that they felt were taking over, and then suddenly you're the reason, you're the scapegoat for their suffering. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What happened there? What, like, was it?
There was, so from that point onwards, there was a mass exodus of Indo-Fijians leaving the country. And the common reason was given, families were trying to get better facilities, better education for their own families and children in Australia, New Zealand, America, were the countries that they were looking upon. In terms of moving to.
And that was the reason, but, like, do you think there was an underlying driver because they didn't feel welcome in the land that they were born?
So my family is maybe the fourth or the fifth generation of Indians living in Fiji. And, you know, I personally relate to Fiji more than I relate to India.
Yeah.
And yeah, took a huge emotional toll on most of us when the time came to leave Fiji. Because Fiji has been home to us for so many years.
Well, how old were you when you left?
I was 20. Going back to 2002, so 20. Might need to edit this. I'm trying to figure it out.
No. 20. A lot of people relate to bad mess.
I'm thinking about the time I got married, 28. I must have been 28.
Okay, we'll lock it in. If give or take a few 5 years, it's in the vicinity. If only you could do that in an exam, eh? Just be like, give or take five on either side.
Yeah, I would have been 28 or 29.
Wow. Did you have family then? Did you have a girlfriend, wife, single man?
So my daughter was 1 year old at that stage. And I had to leave my daughter with my mother for 1 year.
Wow. And you brought your partner with you?
So my then wife came over with me.
Gotcha.
To Auckland. So we tried to settle down over here, get jobs, get a house.
Yeah.
Before getting my daughter over.
Wow. So, why is that? Because there's a lot of responsibility and challenge with having a young one while you're trying to hustle and live in your little container to save money.
So this would have been my second trip overseas at the time.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't have resources on my hands.
How much money did you have when you came? Because this is inspiring.
the amount of money that I had in my pocket was about $12,000, which was my savings from a government scheme while I was still employed. So the savings that I brought over formed 5% of my deposit for my first home.
You came here. So wait, you have 12 grand in your pocket and you buy a house.
So I bought a house within 12 months of my arrival. So the first thing for me was to find a job over here.
Yeah. What was the job?
I worked at a liquor shop.
Yes. Discount. No. I haven't had a drink for 7 years. So a liquor store, what were we doing there? In front of the house? Or at the back?
I was doing everything.
So everything.
From shelving, marketing, being at the front counter.
Marketing. How do you market a liquor store?
So, you get all these advertisement cards and whatnot. Just making sure that the liquor shop in Manu River was presentable enough for maybe new clientele to come through.
But not existing, because once they come, they realize.
Yes. It's a new
clientele. Okay, cool. Yeah,
so it was a bit of a change for me because I've always worked in an office environment in Fiji.
And what were you in Fiji?
So I worked for the government.
Yeah,
I was involved in administration. So straight after school, went into government.
So you jumped out the window when the coup came because you were essentially one of the people in the government.
The coup happened in 1987.
87.
And there were multiple coups after that.
Wow.
So the last coup
did you have a coup code? Like, hey, there's a military coup coming, Operation Z.
We didn't understand. We didn't even know what coup meant, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
It took us a while for that to sink in. And yeah, so the last coup that we experienced was in year 2000.
Wow.
And I moved across to New Zealand in 2002.
So I've never seen one before. Fortunate life. What happens in a coup? So the military just go in guns and say, hey guys, we're the boss now? Or like, what's a military coup?
So essentially most of the services get shut down. Media is not free to report details of what's actually happening on the ground.
Huh.
The last coup, so parliamentarians, elected body officials getting captured, or they were in-house for a number of weeks before they were allowed to get out.
Hmm.
And they were just being used to meet demands of...
So signing papers and stuff, yes, while in prison?
Yes.
Huh. So it's just a few weeks, it wasn't like years or like, they were pulling them around the...
No, okay. It wasn't years.
Still messed up though. But
yeah, for a small country, messed up.
Yeah.
Big time.
Pretty, like, to be honest.
Yes.
Controlling media in Fiji, bro. Like, you know what I mean? They're down the road. Is there a cluster of islands in Fiji or is it?
There's 300 islands in Fiji. So out of the 300, maybe 100 is inhabited.
Okay. Oh, so it is important to control media then. I was like, this is how simple I am. I went to Greece. I don't know where it was.
Okay.
Even though I was in it.
Right.
Yeah. So Fiji has 100 lions. I was thinking one big island. Simple, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, well, control the media. They just knock on the door.
Yeah. Control the media. But, you know, there's a famous thing in Fiji called coconut wireless. So coconut wireless is just, you know, aunties in the village, you know, talking to each other, gossiping. And yeah, that spreads like fire.
Wow. The aunties. I would listen to that, bro. That sounds legit. Couple aunties with gossip about what's happening in the island. Yeah,
but you gotta realize there are a few aunties out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, which auntie do you listen to?
True. All of them. So they went and shut down the aunties, essentially.
No, you can't shut down humans.
Mm.
You know, humans will always talk.
That's true.
You know, the information will always come out.
It's a good point. And that's an important thing about intent and reputation. Remain consistent with your image. I think people get really reactive when you suddenly become something that you weren't portraying before, and I think that's where scandals or fears or cancels happen.
Yes.
So I think a good protection is to remain consistent. Okay, so you come here, you somehow manage to buy a house with 12 grand, give or take. Mad. Obviously, as young. So, and your daughter's over there, one, almost
yes.
two.
Yes.
And you work in the liquor store,
yep.
and you get a mortgage.
Yep.
And how long are you there for?
So at the liquor store, I would have spent about 6-7 months.
Hmm.
But what happened was I used to print out my CVs, and I used to walk around Manurewa, Manukau, business to business, handing out CVs.
Hmm.
And one of the common responses was, why don't you engage or go to a recruitment agency or send them an email?
Mm.
I didn't have a computer at home, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why.
So I was, yeah.
You post it.
Yep, so I was on foot doing door to door. So manager at Westpac in Manurewa was the lady who saw me, who... and caught my attention as well.
Yeah.
And she engaged with me, and, you know, she saw me coming in with the CV and said, oh, you know, who are you? And I gave her a little bit of a background about me.
Yeah.
She said, you just might be perfect as a teller for a branch.
I would agree with that. I reckon you'd be good at teller. You forget how old you were, but other than that, like, as long as...
But I didn't realize that she was trying to reel me in. There were 7 or 8 other ladies at the branch, and they needed a circuit breaker as a male at the branch. Circuit breaker. So,
circuit breaker.
So it didn't take.
Never heard that in my life. I know the literal version. Yeah, okay.
So, it didn't take me long for her to get me into Westpac, but I didn't leave the job at the liquor shop because they were paying me under the table.
Mm, cash.
When I got the job at the liquor shop, and this was 2 days after my arrival to New Zealand.
That's quick.
Because, yeah, I was just out there, you know, just trying to get anything.
Mm.
And, yeah, I didn't realize that, you know, things were not legit. So whatever I got in hand was, you know, it was just a blessing for me.
That's you make a good point there, because I've heard quite a number of migrating Fijians getting taken advantage of.
Yes.
Because, you know, they're to go from essentially a third world country to a first world country, the purchasing power of the money that you have is pretty low in comparison. Like, you're not, doesn't go very far, and to accumulate it, it's quite hard. And suddenly you need to find this new opportunity. Is there certain things you would encourage? So say some Fijian people are moving over and they're listening to this, like some pointers to make sure they don't get taken advantage of, or what to think about?
The year 2022, which we're in, it is much different than what it was
in
2002. So, you know, with the help of the internet, you know, things have opened up. I travel regularly to Fiji as well, and I'm finding people have got resources at hand, and they are quite open about things. So, you know, in terms of getting educated about how things operate outside of the islands, they've got a good understanding of that.
True.
It's another ball game when they do arrive at the overseas location and just get a feel of what's really happening on the ground.
What was it like when you landed? You know, like, was it a cultural shock? You know, when I went to Thailand, I was like, what the hell? Or Turkey. Turkey was out the gate. Israel was amazing.
It was...
Why is everyone wearing flip-flops like that? I don't know what they do in Fiji. I've never been.
It did feel strange. And I think there was this... the language barrier as well, because our... you know, my accent is a little bit different from the common Kiwi over here. Someone, you know, if speaking with a Kiwi individual over here, they sometimes assume that our level of understanding according to the language is the same.
Mm.
They speak very fast. And sometimes we're looking at the lips of the person uttering the words, right?
Hmm.
What is Ryan trying to say?
Yeah, so a lot of people thought you were flirting, but you just didn't understand.
Yes.
So,
sometimes you need to slow down, Ryan, when you're speaking with an immigrant like me.
Okay, I'll talk real slow just for you. I try to adapt. Yeah. There's a concept of mirror neurons. So every human has a cluster of neurons in their brain that help them register how others feel.
Yep.
So if I start munching on a lemon, you won't feel too good about it. So if I'm conscious, especially when I was quite introverted and found it hard to connect with people, I would mirror the pace that they speak. I'd copy their body language. Sounds a little freaky, but it works. And then you'll start noticing that they'll start copying you. Have you ever had a friend like where you start walking in the same time, breathing the same time? Well, maybe not breathing. You wouldn't notice that. But like you start talking similarly and replicating each other.
Yes.
So that's the same concept. Instead of waiting for that, you make it happen. But anyway, it's a long story.
Yeah.
So Teller, Circuit Breaker.
Yes.
Westpac.
Yes.
How long were you there for?
I was there for 8 months. I got promoted to being a support officer.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they used to call back in the day. So from Teller to support, and then you can get into investment or consultant work.
Hmm.
So I quickly got promoted, and but I felt things were happening too fast for me. I was missing my daughter tremendously.
Yeah.
And what I had to do was, I told my boss at Westpac that I just wanted to leave the bank. Even though it felt like that I was making progress, there was some darkness within me.
Mm.
And the darkness was not being there with my daughter. I resigned. I went back to Fiji.
Hmm. Wow. You had some say, you left your house, you left your wife, or what? She's just sitting there eating biscuits by herself. Like, what happened, bro?
She did support me to leave so that I could clear my head. But she was also mindful that it was my daughter that I needed to see, spend some time with. I went to Fiji, I spent a few weeks with my daughter. I came back.
Mm.
I came back.
That's enough daughter time. Back to another year.
I made arrangements for her to come over.
Ah, yeah, nice.
So, you know, in my head, I said, yep, within the next couple of months, I will get my daughter over.
Did she recognize you? That would have been hard. Oh,
Come on, man.
Yeah, but like, no internet.
We used to speak regularly on the phone.
Ah, yeah.
So, no video calling those days.
Yeah.
Just a good old form.
That would have been that. How tough would that be? Like, say you're traversing to another country for a better life for your family. Come back, daughter doesn't recognize you because she's one.
Yes.
I'm glad that didn't happen. So you arranged your details, and now you got no job and you're back.
I'm back, and so I started the process all over again, and there was an option to go back to Westpac. The doors were still open for me.
Nice.
but I didn't relate myself as working in the bank anymore.
Well explained. Yep.
I was lucky enough to get a job with GE Finance.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was a collections role, working in a call center.
Answering or calling?
It was calling.
Calling. You were doing outbound.
Yes.
So you were getting new clients to get a loan.
We were trying to recover money.
Oh, yeah. Still then.
So, yep. So it was all about collecting.
How does that go? So you're like, ring, ring. Hello, this is blah, blah, blah from blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And where's my money?
Yep. I believe you missed a payment last week.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. It was just tough, man. Like, you know, I had too many McFlurries.
Yep. But then this Friday, you'll be making double payment, Ryan. Would that be okay?
I don't know if I can.
Okay. What we will do is we'll do a triple arrangement. But you will pay, Ryan. And then you get to hear the ringtone. The call has been disconnected, right? Because Ryan is not interested anymore.
Yeah, I see. I know obviously this was a playful way of doing it. But I mean, imagine that's true. Like, I would actually be interested in, because that's a common thing. The biggest challenge most businesses face is cash flow. And what causes that cash flow issue, like not having consistent money in the business, is that people aren't paying on time and they're not chasing up. So I'm wondering, using your understanding, like, is there a system or a process or tools you've developed that help encourage people to pay?
It takes time to build a relationship, whether it's your customers, whether it's your families, whether it's your friends.
Mm.
So what, you know, over the years, I've found out that sometimes we just, we're pushing things, trying to make things happen in the way that we feel is right, without understanding the other person in front of us who might be battling his own demons.
Mm.
So sometimes also we, you know, because we're looking at the volume of cases, we miss out on quality. And whether it's because, you know, we've got staffing issues, this lack of resources on our end that we're just trying to speed through work, and that doesn't go well with me. So because I like to engage with people and I like to learn a little bit more about the person in front of me before coming to the gist of the problem.
Gotcha.
So that this problem does not become recurring in future.
That's an interesting point, because you're not, one, you're building rapport, but what you're doing is you're not getting the solution, you're helping them find the solution for their problem. You know what I mean? So by you focusing on the issue they have and resolving that, you're going to get something out of that, though that's not how you're going about it.
Yes. It's a long-term game.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. So that's such a, yeah, it's a tough, if it's a tough job, really, just calling up. So is there, how do you, because in essence, you're a coach. If you think about it, you're calling people up, building rapport and helping them navigate the challenges of their life.
Yep. But I've never seen myself as a coach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or you call yourself?
In the beginning, I would have said it's just the means of me getting income, looking after my own family. So, you know, I needed to be sure to look after myself so that I can be at work 5 days in a week or 6 days, whatever it was, and doing everything that my employer wanted me to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, the coaching aspect has kind of developed over the years with experience, and possibly coming to a stage in life where money is important, but not maybe, you know, I'm not chasing the money these days.
Yeah. What was the realization? Like, obviously not going into your specific situation, but what was the turning point? Because there'll be a lot of family members listening, or parents, they spent their whole life supporting and caring for their family and sacrificing their own happiness in order for the safety and security of their family. And you're saying you're coming to a realization about not prioritizing money over certain things. What helps you come to that realization, or what would your advice be to parents still in that mindset?
I'm more of a person, I tell my friends this, you know, we got to make the most of what we have today. You know, sometimes we're over planning things. We're trying to be that Nostradamus, right? Predicting into the future that, oh, you got to do this today so that you can have a happy life tomorrow. But what about the happiness today? Why can't we just accept whatever we've got in our hands today? And, you know, and stop that comparison with, oh, you know, Ryan drives that fancy car. Ryan drives that fancy car because he's worked hard all his life.
It's a Toyota Camry that's broken, but
thank you. It's still got four wheels. It gets you from A to B.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, yeah, sometimes we don't look at the backstory of an individual success. And just stop comparing, man. Just live your life.
It's smart. I mean, it is like there's always someone better, faster, stronger. And so if you're continually comparing yourself, you're continually in a perpetual state of unhappiness.
Yes.
So you make some good point. And like, just, you know, we've talked over LinkedIn for quite a while. We've met each other. This is the second time. I'm starting to see a certain talent you have around coaching, inspiring others, which is interesting because our first conversation, I didn't talk about that, but like thinking and hearing it now. So I'm wondering, assuming that is something you're good at, what would you do? Like, let's say either it's a friend, either it's a client, either it's a particular person in a challenging point of their life.
Yes.
What would your advice be? And we can do a scenario if you want, if it helps context. Because you're doing that all the time. You might not think about it, but every time you're calling someone up, building rapport and solving their problem.
Yes. That word advice, I'm slowly trying to get away from it.
Okay.
Why? <Tips. laughs> Why it's, I feel like, you know, when we're advising people, we're not really walking in their shoes. So it definitely takes some time. Like, I'm really good with my families and friends. I'm not good with you because, you know, this is the second time that I've met you. So I can't really be advising you until we've built on a relationship.
Gotcha.
So that advice can come at a later stage of our journey in our friendship.
Friends
from I wouldn't say friends with benefits, but you know, we,
friends with consequences. Yeah, good.
Yeah. So for good things to happen, it takes time.
Yeah.
And you know, from word go, if I've met someone new, I'm not gonna advise him. Mm. I'm gonna talk to him. I'm gonna listen to him, right?
Yeah, well, you make a very good point. Like, in my experience, the best solution for the problem was to listen to the problem, mostly. And you know, I don't have any particular special talent around helping people with that, but I'm very good at it. And the reason I say it's not a talent is because they have all the answers. I'm just asking the question. You know, so that's an important thing that you said there, is actually not giving advice on something you don't understand, listening more than you talk initially, and then focusing on them.
Yes.
You might not sound like you're a wizard, mate. You might not take pride in your skill set, but there's reasons why that works. Okay. So, okay. So then your GE Finance, and then you went, was GE Finance Center Instant Finance or?
No. So, GE Finance is a global company, and it's one of the branches is finance. So from GE, I went to Merrick Finance. I stayed with GE Finance for about eight months as well, before going across to Merrick Finance, which is called Heartland Bank.
Ah, yeah.
So I was based in Newmarket. I was the recovery supervisor, so I managed a couple of teams under me. In the collections side.
How many people?
So all up there would have been 20.
Come on, brother. When are you going to say there's something good about you? You're like, oh, yeah, I went to this global organization. I learned how to get money off people and then educated team of 20.
I was still growing at this stage.
Bro, you'll be Michael Jordan. You'll be like, eh, my jump shot's not good. Okay, sorry. Yeah, team of 20.
Eight and a half years later, I kind of felt I had had enough of the corporate life.
It took me one day.
I had a good salary package and yeah, there was a good system back at the old employer. But yeah, I felt I wasn't at the right place.
Yeah. Just on that, going back, because you just demonstrated 8.5 years of leadership of a team of 20. So we're not going to walk over that. We're not going to forget that. What would you do as a leader, and what have your lessons been as a leader? Whether you call it, and you don't like that word either, but what?
If I was to reflect, perhaps there would be a few things I would have done differently.
Okay.
Perhaps one of the things I would have done is not to walk out, right?
Yeah, not leave.
Yeah.
What's a good start?
Even though I was asked, you know, to reconsider my decision. And I felt my headspace was not in the right space. I needed the time off. I did request. I did say that, you know, give me 3 months without salary and let me get my head into a better place. And I will come back refreshed. So that request was declined, and that was just the tipping point for me to say no. I appreciate myself more, I think. And I was told by everyone that, you know, Avi, you've kicked a good job away. What are you doing? Because I didn't have plan B.
Yeah.
I left the job. I was distributing junk mail.
Just on that. This was the most stupid prank I ever used to do as a kid.
Yes.
I would get junk mail.
Yes.
And just put it in people's letterbox that says no junk mail and then run off.
That's hilarious. That's you.
that sums me up. But the problem is then the person that was advertising would have got in trouble because it would have looked like they did it. So I just... Yes. So junk mail, okay.
So yeah, junk mail for about 3 months.
Nice. How did you love it?
I loved it because it prompted me to get out of the house and walk.
Ah, yeah.
So, you know, a few kilometers of walking each day, every day.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I involved my wife. I involved my daughter as well.
You were just going for walks. And
it became a family thing, right?
Let's go for our walk. Here's our money. Let's go get it some fucking food.
Yeah, and I was too proud to go to Wins for support.
Gotcha.
And yeah, with the junk mail, I used to get maybe about $100-$150 on a weekly basis. And yeah, it was tough going.
Mortgage still at that time?
So I had separated. By that time.
Yeah.
And so my house and everything was given away to my ex-wife.
Oh, you gave it to her?
It was...
Involuntarily.
It was given away, yeah. Because my daughter was with my ex at that stage.
Yeah.
So I was... I was caught in an emotional storm, I suppose. Yeah. And again, people were saying, well, why didn't you claim half share and whatnot? And I said, no. It's okay.
Yeah.
My relationship with my daughter was my main concern, my main focus.
Fair.
And so I didn't have a mortgage. I was renting at that stage.
Were you eating chickpeas? Rent. How much was rent? 80?
Rent was, so surely. I was...
rent was 400.
I was renting an apartment unit. I think it was around 250, 260 for a two-bedroom unit.
A week.
And
so you're losing $100 a week for food.
So, but wow. Then again, yeah, I had support of my partner who became my wife later on.
Ah, yeah. So she was balling.
Yes.
Good.
And,
How did you feel like, you know, because some men might be like, feel emasculated or feel, especially traditional, old school, certain age point, they get a lot of self-worth and self-satisfaction from providing for the family. And you've gone from, hey, this hotshot job, leaving it, and then you've got a bad headspace, now you're doing junk mail, and you're relying on this lady, yes. And then other people are telling you, what have you done?
I just felt like a dickhead for walking out that job. And in regards to, while still doing the junk mail runs, the other side of me was, attending interviews, pushing my CVs out. And this time I was doing it electronically or, or going to the recruitment offices. And
A modern version of doing that.
Yes.
Because I've done the CV thing. I worked at a place called Abracababra.
Okay, yes.
It was a kebab shop. It's where the magic happened. And I'd hand in the CV and he's like, thank you so much. And I was like, this isn't going to go well. So I said to him, hey, look, I know you're going to put this at the bottom of the pile of those 20 other CVs, but you need someone that's reliable, it's going to turn up.
Yes.
I'm here, I'm ready. He's like, all right, you want to come in tomorrow? Like, fuck it.
Yes.
But the modern day version of that is LinkedIn. So you think of your dream job, you put what you're looking for in the first, 20 characters.
Yes.
Because every time you comment, it shows up. And then everyone that engaged with that content will see it. And you just massively engage with your dream companies, with all the decision makers, and then you meet for coffee. And then that's how you do your modern day version of what you do. But just on that, LinkedIn. You might not want to admit it, but Avi here has built and amassed quite a large and loyal, we don't know if they're loyal, to be fair. They could be off like in everyone's comments. But you get a huge amount of engagements with your LinkedIn. So I actually want to learn about that because I have made a few changes based on I read all your posts for 6 months. I was like, what is this guy doing? And then I just changed and my engagement's improved. So 6 months ago, how many months ago did you start?
So I started off in January of this year.
January.
Yep.
And why did you want to start or what was the catalyst for it?
So Auckland was, Auckland, New Zealand was thrown into lockdown last August 2021.
Don't look at me, bro. My life carried on. Okay, now my office is at home. Like, nothing's different.
My my wife said, Avi, you need to do something a little bit differently, and that was in terms of job security. So I was seeing a lot of restructures happening at my current work, and my missus was just saying, what's plan B for you? She gave me the idea that, Avi, you need to have a LinkedIn account.
Mm.
I think she was also trying to force me into a platform whereby, the energy that I throw in the house, and the disturbing energy that I throw on her, on my children, so is directed towards something else.
She put the kid on the treadmill.
Something like that. I created the account last year, but I didn't start posting until January of this year.
Yeah.
And I wasn't too sure as to what to write, what to post, because I'm not a businessman. I'm just a simple brown boy.
Yeah.
Just trying to find my way in life.
There's a lot of simple people just trying to find their way in life. I won't say simple brown because that's messed up, but simple people in general trying to find their way in life. So just to add value to the people, because a lot of things I think brand is single-handedly the most important thing, but you still got to put the lights on. You still got to make sales. But if you could go all in on brand and you can still keep your lights on, that's game changer. But people don't start out of fear. So you had that. What helped you get reassurance or taking that first step? How did you work through it? Who gave you advice,
Yep. So I started to engage with people on their own post.
Yeah.
I started to react. I started to comment. And it was through commenting, I think, that gave me confidence to start doing my own post. And one of the people who helped me out was Stanley Henry.
Shout out,
from The Attention Seeker.
7-figure business in 2 years, and when it was going to go bankrupt for a very day, he did well, really well. He's
like, he's like a brother to me, and he was the first person that, you know, just naturally we connected. We had a coffee early January, and and all he did was just sit and listen to me.
Followed your own advice.
No advice, you know, just sit, listen to me. And you know, in a week or two later, he said, "Oh, Avi, we're doing this 30-day challenge." So Attention Seeker was doing a 30-day challenge where they, you know, they put out a question and you develop that into a post of your own. And it could be something like, you know, what is your hobby? What do you do for work? And then,
just on the comments thing, because that's an important thing, that outreach. It's I think the best places to focus in terms of growing your business is to do the things that are unscalable, that large corporations don't want to do or can't do, and that's manpower. You can't scale that. You can use bots, but we know.
Yes.
Maybe you can scale it later. So yes. how did you decide on who to comment on it? Were you just going through your feed commenting? Were you targeted? How did you know what post to comment on? Like, how do you go about discovery?
There was, I didn't have a plan in mind. So it was learning as I go. Like you said, you know, we didn't know how to walk. So you start with crawling, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get on your feet and...
I started with swimming, believe it or not. I swam before I could walk, yeah. But anyways, random question.
No plan whatsoever. But it was within me. I was looking at people who I could relate to. People who would be projecting the same thoughts, the same sort of language, perhaps, that I relate to. I like simple language. I hate all these fancy jargons.
Yeah.
So people with fancy jargons would be, I'd just dismiss them right away.
Okay. Would you scroll the news feed? Would you search? How would you find them?
I wasn't using the search engine. So I think initially it was people just coming through in my feed.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, connecting with one. And then I would see there were other similar connections to this particular connection. And soon enough, I would find out that, these are the people, you know, of the same tribe, maybe.
That's smart. You know, I just like to analyze everything because I'm a bit like that. So if I think about that, one, you're just being a genuine person building genuine connections. The other part is you're connecting with people that create the same type of content as you in a different app realm.
Yes.
So their audience will appeal to you.
Yes.
So you got the scroll through that, you make engagements, and then you're doing the 30-day challenge.
Yes.
Did you start noticing things that would work and things that wouldn't, or what was your learning process?
Yeah, well, the first couple of posts, you know, like I thought I'd, you know, whatever I write from my heart. But of course, it was not relatable. To people reading my posts, and so there was a lot of changing and chopping of my own script that used to happen. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sometimes I'd feel, you know, I've written paragraph after paragraph. People don't like long stories.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes, you know, a one sentence could do, you know, you could drive that message home.
Yeah.
Effectively. True. And so it's, there's no magic mantra. If I can relate to Ryan, you know, Ryan will definitely, engage with me on my post and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it. There's no real shortcuts. And, I'm not looking to amass a huge following. I believe in quality, and that quality, you know, small can be beautiful, right? Things don't have to be to be big, to be grand.
True. There's a lot of smart things in there. So one, you're reaching out to people with similar language that have an audience that appeal. Next, you're being aware of how people are consuming that content and that people aren't necessarily engaging with the long form. And then you're also trying to have a back end focus of value, and you're authentically expressing who you are consistently from when they first do the outreach, when you first comment, to when they engage with you.
Yes.
So there's brand consistency.
Yes.
I know, like, you probably don't think like this, but I'm just like learning. Okay. So what do you try with different type? Like, okay, let's go creative. So the photo, what do you think about when you create a photo?
I've got 1,000 photos on my phone, right?
Okay.
So when, if I'm looking at a photo, you know, it could be of my family, it could be of my friend, could be of a pet. There's a little bit of stories coming into my head. And so what I do is I'll try to project the thoughts into words. Mm. And yeah, it doesn't have to be too in-depth, but it has to be meaningful for whoever is reading the post or engaging with me.
Gotcha.
I'm not learned. You know, I did not go to a university or
LinkedIn,
you
know, university.
So, you know, the life has been a good teacher for me.
Yeah.
And you know, I've got a lot of experiences in that regard. And I feel I can share these experiences on LinkedIn or whichever platform.
It's smart. Like, because if I think, like, I because I want to learn how to systemize and scale this so I can reach more people and make more impact.
Yes.
So I need a process to be able to do that. So I think about you. So you're like, okay, you got this creative, which is the photo.
Yes.
The photo often needs to complement the words. Yes. And how you're doing that is using the creative, the photo, as inspiration for the words.
Yes.
And then trying to convey it in a way that leads to a meaningful impact. So what do you find using your life experiences, what sort of words or approach do you try to make it more relatable or meaningful, to use your words? Like, it's like you look at this text and you may be reading someone else's content. Yes. Like, this lacking this, it's lacking that, or it's doing this, it's doing that. What would you put in those lists?
This is one thing that that's come into my mind, and it's about the following that we have, right? So, you know, if I'm following Ryan, I'll do that out of something that I like about you, I love about you, right? But I will not imitate Ryan. The moment I start imitating Ryan is when I will lose my authentic self. I want to remain Avi, as weird or, you know, or as stupid as I look sometimes. This is me, right? So, follow but don't imitate, man.
It's, gotcha.
You know, you'll just lose yourself.
This important thing is where in selling, they teach you to learn the 1%. So you find the top performers in any organization and you take 1% from them.
Yes.
And creativity is, in my opinion, not something that's created from nothing. It's created from 1,000 other ideas that you made your own. So it's kind of like a recipe. You got the same ingredients, but your recipe creates a different outcome.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you got that. And then do you think of colors with the creative, or you've always just found a random picture and you're like, I'll post that and write some stuff about it?
It's it's funny, Ryan. You know, when so, you know, let's talk about selfies, right? You know, on LinkedIn, it's a big no-no.
Yeah.
That's what they used to say.
Yeah, interesting. You know,
whenever somebody put a selfie out, you know, sometimes you'd get this barrage of comments saying, this is not Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And to me, that's just noises. Look at LinkedIn now. Look at my post, right? There's more selfies than anything. I think it's just my own way of showing the middle finger to all these so-called rule makers who, you know, who want things to be serious, who want they need we are humans, man. We've got emotions. We need some love and humor in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, so the more they say no, the more I will say yes.
You make, yeah, keep going.
The photos, I'll use whatever I have on my camera roll. And I won't mess around with that. You know, it's got to be as natural as it can be.
Yeah, the rule maker up here. I'm just like taking rules from it. So there's a few things that work with that. So one, that because you're taking selfies and you're included in nearly every photo, when they're scrolling through their newsfeed, instant brand recognition.
Yes.
I know this person. I know how they make me feel, and they've delivered on that outcome again.
Yes.
They follow you they're watching you, and then they follow you after a while. So that's smart. The other thing around authenticity is that you have more people that hate you, but more people that love you.
Yes.
If you're inauthentic, you have people that like you, but very few people that love you. And I think that's a very important thing in business and in life. The depth of the connection will facilitate the greater success, whether emotionally or financially. So if you can be more authentic,
yep.
If you can recognize what the market's doing, do contrary to that, going into the space of the unknown, podcasts, YouTube shorts, TikTok, and then it rewards you at the consequence of hate. So you just got to mentally prepare. You haven't gone on TikTok. TikTok's a different world, brother. LinkedIn's a little people-pleasy corporate. They don't say much unless it's my content and I trigger them.
Yeah.
That's a rare thing. So, okay, well, I think personally, would you be open to, if someone were to reach out, I know initially you'll listen, but if they wanted to improve their brand in LinkedIn and they're willing to pay a certain amount and they can dictate that or you can, whatever, would you be open to giving them some support and guidance on that?
I'm always natural in giving support. So
but charge them.
But that's another thing that I need to change my mindset, right?
Yeah.
I've always reached out to people to help in the purest form that is, right? Without seeking an advantage on my end. And possibly, who knows?
Yeah, no, okay, so people pay him. But you just tell him, so you reach out to Avi on his LinkedIn. Hey, Avi, I saw you on the podcast. I want some advice on LinkedIn. I'm willing to pay this amount. Is that okay? Yeah. You'll just probably say yes. Personally, I think your understanding of LinkedIn and the profile that you've developed, I think your time's worth $200 an hour. I think that someone should pay that because LinkedIn is not something that people have been successful. And the challenge you face with your industry is, what are you selling? You know what I mean? You're solving problems that already exist. You're not bringing in new clients. So your LinkedIn, well, like, what's the outcome, right? Like, you're just making lots of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just on that, like, how would people find you? So we've done an hour, believe it or not. Okay. So how would people find you? And hypothetically speaking, if they wanted advice on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Or maybe something in general, they're in a tough spot in their life, yes. They want some support or whatever. What problem do you want to solve the most, put it that way, before they reach out to you? Just
I want to make people feel good about themselves.
Okay.
So if they're fighting some demons within themselves, if they're finding themselves in a hard spot, lonesome spot, I'm the guy to talk to.
Huh. Cool. And because, in my opinion, the most important people that need help are the helpers.
Yes.
So don't leech off them.
Yes.
Reach out. Your concerns are valid, but just, you know, there's a cost for your time. I'm selling for you, okay? But on that note, how do they find you? I guess your LinkedIn, would that be the best?
LinkedIn would be the best way to find me.
Cool. Yeah. So I'll add a link in the description, and they can reach out, and we'll see if we can get you to build a website in the future as well. We're thinking of some ideas.
Thank you, Ryan.
All good, brother. No worries.